What's up, crew? We got an interview coming up with Nick Tumanello. He's a strength coach currently based out of Florida. He's written several books. He's spoken at national, international conventions on such things as shoulder health and program design. I've heard him speak several times, really great speaker. I invited him to speak at our local Oregon NSCA event, and I had to bring him on for our own podcast. What we're going to be talking about today is program design. Nick says it several times on the podcast, and I really appreciate it, as he tries to give away his nuts and bolts as much as he can. There's no secrets or things like that where you got to like buy this thing to see the package or whatnot. But for him, it was interesting to learn about, you know, what he uses to build his program, what are his objective measures, what are his period blocks like, and also the reality that most of us aren't training high-end athletes, and when we train athletes, it's actually probably the easiest type of periodization. The hard periodization is the stuff we have to do and programs we have to do for someone for years on end in that general population client. And so you're going to kind of learn his approach and really how to build that long-lasting buy-in, get the results you're looking for, and provide the entertainment value that your clients need so they don't walk away. So enjoy. All right, Nick, thank you for making the time to sit down and chit chat today. It's been fun to get to know you a little bit in the last few months, and I'm excited to talk a little bit about like program design. I know for myself, it's something I have a decent understanding of, but personally, for my own fitness, I want to get better at it. But I think from the PT side of things, we're good at program designs for a month or two, but not for the long haul and the wellness aspect of it. So I'm really interested to learn from you selfishly today. Before we get into anything, let's give a little like the customary background, like who are you, where are you at, kind of what's your practice like, or your path like, and all that stuff.
Well, what I was complimenting you on, well said, just so people don't think I was complimenting you on just because you were praising me, we tend to be very good at programming for like a month, but what about long-term clients? After that first sort of, after they've kind of seen a lot of your moves and heard some of your jokes, where do you go from there? What's going to keep them coming back, especially when there's a lot of other shiny objects out there that they could go to that are interesting and calling their name? And marketing machines behind them, you know, Orange Theory Fitness, things of that nature. So I'm not going to get too much into who I am, just because it's easy to find online. People want to listen to this and benefit from it. So we'll get into cut to the chase. I will say this. I'm a trainer before I'm an educator. I've owned multiple facilities. I've trained all kinds of clients from NFL athletes like Steve Weatherford, which you can see online, to everyday Joes and Janes. I've been a strength coach for MMA, pro Muay Thai team. Up and down, I've trained pro figure girls, IFBB pros who are in the Olympia, you name it, I've worked with it. I've been very transparent with what I do. If you go on YouTube and just type in my name and different types of, you know, MMA, Nick Tumanello bodybuilding, you will see Nick Tumanello, Baltimore Ravens. I'm from Baltimore. You can see me working with actual players. So I don't just talk. I've put it out there for, you know, over a decade. I'm very transparent with what I do. And I'm a trainer who talks about my experiences and my thought processes, and I share with them for people to take or leave. I am not just a stage stomper or an author who writes about fitness. I'm a trainer who writes about it. I'm also not an academic person. I come from a practical first, cut to the chase. What does it mean practically? And I'm into science, but I don't really care about the science if it doesn't change my training. I'm more of a need to know, not a nice to know. I don't care about trying to win trainer Jeopardy.
Yes. Yeah. What do you have any mentors or things that kind of crafted your development as a trainer and coach?
I better would say that there's nobody I've worked with consistently enough, especially coming up as a trainer, that I would call them a mentor. Right. Yeah. I would say that the person who resonated with me most when I was a young trainer coming up, which was in the very late 90s, was Coach Juan Carlos Santana. He just seemed to be the most real world to me. I like that he didn't sort of, even though that was the boom of functional training and it was really cool to stand on wobbly stuff and train in 3D, you know, Hey, keep in mind, this is, you know, over 20 years ago now. So yeah. Things, a lot of things have changed since then. But even though still he still paid mind to isolation exercises. He didn't yeah. seem to be, he was dogmatic in his own way, but not as dogmatic in that context. And I certainly have to owe some thanks to Paul Cech. There's certainly a lot of things that he said or did that I don't agree with. I'm not endorsing everything about the guy, but he was the very first person I ever saw at a conference when I was like 17 years old as a young trainer that showed me that there's more to exercise than machines and bodybuilding, you know? Yes. Yeah. And there's this very technical sort of egghead side that I was like, wow, I was blown away by. And that really sort of sent me down the path of, wow, I didn't know what I didn't know about the amount of thinking that you can put into this and attention to detail.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's get into it. So the topic we're going to be talking about today is program design. But before we get into how to build a program, I just think it'd be good to review some basics about tissue adaptation and maybe what's crafting the program design. So from your point of view, I don't need like a research paper or anything like that, but like, how long do you think it takes to see changes in strength output or muscle hypertrophy or just general tissue adaptation? Because that might then craft how long your program block is or your periodization, or do you have like some sort of framework that you use for that stuff on just timeframes?
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about, I'm going to try to give as much context as possible. Yeah. If we're talking about a beginner, yeah. We do actually have, and I'm not just sitting here and talk about, you know, in 1979, Schmidberger did a research study. Yeah. I'll just summarize studies. I've written on this before, so I've looked at the research. There is a few studies that you can see not just neuromuscular changes, but physiological changes in hypertrophy within 2 weeks for beginner training. So you can add muscle fast, right? That being said, my baseline, if it's a very specific goal like strength, right, and we're measuring and we know how we're measuring it, whether it be, you know, how many chin-ups you can do or your max bench press, whatever we decide is important to your metric, whether it be because your coach for college football wants you to meet a certain goal or if it's your own personal goals, then that phase doesn't end until you meet that metric. So, yeah. You know, you may be in a strength focused phase for a year. If that's what it takes for you to achieve your goal. Now, obviously, now we can start getting into, well, what about for tennis? What about preseason and postseason? Yeah. All that is, who are we talking about? And I'll be happy to answer any of those questions specific. I'll tell you exactly what I do.
Yeah.
I always tell people all my secrets are well known. I just think I do a better job of putting it together and being more objective about it and not putting my bias into things. I feel like that's probably the biggest hang up, you know, where if you were a trainer and you're really into powerlifting, you generally try to train people like powerlifters, whether you know it or not. You know, if you're really into Olympic lifting, then you tend to think Olympic lifts are the secret to everything. If you tend to be really into functional training and 3D training, then you tend to think everybody needs exactly what you have. I try to look at it as just go, look, I don't care how this food tastes. What do you like? Do you like it? What's the nutrient value? I try to look at all training like you look at foods. What's the nutrient value? What does it provide? And what is it deficient in? And I'll look at it as what it provides. And then I'll do something else to provide nutrients that other thing we did is deficient in. I think that's why I pride myself on being one of the best at program design, because we take a very analysis-based approach, an analyzer versus a memorizer. You know, my coach told me to do this, therefore I like this. Or I'm a big fan of Louis Simmons, therefore I do this because Louis said so.
Yeah, yeah. So then on the opposite end of that, like, how long of recovery do you think you need? So you're working a muscle group or a pattern or however you're approaching it. Do you not work that same muscle group or pattern for 48 hours or something? Or do you have any sort of basis that you work on there?
Yeah, in general, about 48 hours.
Yeah.
There's some research, if you're talking about 1RM strength, there's some research. I don't remember how often they did it, but they just did 1RMs like every work. I think it was every workout. I'm not sure how often they worked out. If it was three times a week, five times a week, whatever. But, and they found that actually increased 1RM faster than, you know, different things. Yeah. Well, it's just because your body just gets better. You just got good at lifting. You got good at doing 1RMs. Yeah. So in that case, if we're just looking at sort of a general rule of thumb, yeah, I would say, especially if we're really blasting a muscle, if hypertrophy is the main goal, then yeah, about every 48 hours or so. And I think there's probably some research to back that up.
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest issues with, like, I don't want to throw Orange Theory underneath the bus, but like, you can't do sprints, high speed rowing, and max interval, whatever, renegade rows for 20 minutes straight and do that 5 days in a row and not have something show up. Like, yes. I don't think the average Joe knows that. Like, they feel like they got a great workout, and then 4 weeks later, they have this back pain or whatever, the shoulder starts hurting. They think it's because they did this workout wrong or something. No, it's the prior 4 weeks of no recovery or program design.
Well, let me, I don't want to steal your thunder if you have, if you have a certain direction, but let me, let me say this. The people that we have, we as trainers and physical therapists and everybody in between, the hybrids, we seem to have the most trouble with is the general fitness person who likes the Orange Theory / CrossFit / all those things, F45s, things that are like that. Now, they might not like, you know, they might like one of those schools, right? Some people might not like OTF because there's too many treadmills or whatever, but we understand what I like. They like the variety. They like getting their ass kicked.
Yeah.
And they're a little bit more serious about exercise than some people were. That's just the last thing that they'll do. Right. Okay. In general, us trainers, most trainers, especially young trainers, when they first get in, they say, I want to train athletes. Well, it's kind of because it's easy. It's sexy. Yeah. It's easy. They make you look good. They're already bought in. They're already disciplined. They have a reason to do it. That's very specific. They have a specific off season. They have goals to achieve in the off season, especially if they have a coach who's given them metrics. Or if you're training for physique, you basically know, hey, look, every day counts, right? Or if you're training for a powerlifting competition. So in fact, it's like, it's kind of easy training that. What's hard is when you have to train somebody who has no real clear defined goals, right? Maybe they come to you as a trainer because they're training for their wedding and they want to look best for their wedding or their high school reunion. But after that, what happens when that goes away? And then they're just a client, right? And, you know, they want to get stronger, but they don't really pay much attention to the lifts to be a deadlifter, right? They want to build muscle, but they don't want to organize their entire life around gyms and kitchens like they're training for a physique competition. And I think that's the one, those tend to be the long-term clients. And sometimes I've had figure girls, I've had professional athletes that I've worked with, fighters who have been serious about competing and then have stayed with me, and they've become a fitness client. And they're like, man, I'm sick of the tilapia and brown rice and broccoli. Now I want to just focus on staying in shape, right? Yeah. And I think that's the thing that we have the hardest time with, because they don't really fit in any of the boxes that we read about program design. In fact, the things that they like, variety, an ass-kicking workout, are the things that thoughtful trainers tend to get scared about, because they look at them and they go, well, you're dysfunctional, or not every, you know, every, any good trainer can make you tired, but only a good trainer can make you better. Or, you know, well, you have to focus on being consistent to see progress, but yet the free market is handing those trainers their ass because that's not where people are gravitating toward. So the question is, how do we get that market, and how do we program for them in a way that gives them all the things they already like, but also provides that medicine? It gets them to come to you because your medicine is more effective and it's less dangerous, less risky.
True.
So if I'm not stealing your thunder, am I at least kind of getting closer to, are we kind of, is that who we're really talking about
here? Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that's the most common average Joe these days in the fitness industry. Is those people that kind of want a butt kicking workout and will go anywhere to do it.
So let's, I just want to say that to make sure that everybody listening knows, well, who are we talking to? Are we talking about seniors? Are we talking about this? Or, because if it's just football or soccer, I mean, there's so many manuals online that are off season training and in season training. But that's, it's the money is not in athletes. The money is in the general population.
Yes.
You know, so unless you're training kids, because the parents are paying for it.
Yeah.
That's a whole separate thing.
Yes. Okay. So let's get to the nuts and bolts a little bit. So you have Mary Sue coming in, or whoever we want to name the person, and you're working on building out their program design for their fitness plan. Where do you start? Do you have like
an
assessment you used and then build up the plan from there? Yeah, kind of run me through the thought process.
Sure. Well, let's talk about general principles of training them. And I'm not going to talk about, you know, principles of specific adaptations to impose demands and not things that you can read in any NSCA manual or every other book. So before we get to the assessment, yes, I do have that.
Yeah.
Is we have a tendency as trainers, when someone is not training for a clearly defined goal, we always think, well, how do we gauge progress? Right. So the first thing we want to understand is, and we can, by the way, you can always ask clients this. Usually all the answers are in front of you if you ask your clients. And their answers might not be extremely refined, right? They may say they want to lose weight, and then they might say that they want to lose, you know, 10 pounds in a month. And you go, okay, well, it's fat loss. Maybe we'll go for about a pound or two a week, but it's fat loss. Okay. So normally general fitness people, general populations, as we call it, the way they gauge progress is that how often they would train with you versus without you. Meaning like, hey, if I'm not with a trainer, I might work out once a week and it's the first thing I cancel off my schedule, maybe twice a week. However, when I'm with you, I'll train, you know, when I'm doing these classes, I do it 3-4 times a week, or I don't want to do it once a week, or I wouldn't do it at all. But when I'm with you and I got it scheduled, I'll do it twice a week. So their metric, their first metric is that's the number. The number is, if this doesn't suck and I don't hate this, then I'll come religiously twice a week.
Yep.
Right. But if I hate this, I might not do it.
Yeah.
So that is progress to them. Us trainers, we're already bought in. We literally live in a gym.
Yeah.
So that's not a big deal to us, but it is a big deal to them.
Yep.
That's A. Now that brings me to B. General fitness people want four things that all start with F, right? In no particular order.
Okay.
Fitness, function, fat loss, fun. All right. Now let me describe each of those real quick. Fitness is they just want to be in better shape. They don't want to feel as tired, right, when they're doing things. And of course, fitness also tends to be what they kind of look like about, you know, how they look, right, in shape.
Yeah.
That kind of bleeds into function, where they also want to be able to do the activities that the activities that they love, because they tend to lead an active lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right. So which is why they tend to like to do things they feel like things that they do outside of there, or feel like will carry over to that. I know a lot of trainers hate the word functional. If you get past your own biases about that term, that's what clients understand.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So you got to speak in trainer language. You have to relate to them. They have to feel, it's got to be like Cheers. Do you get me? Right. So all they mean is what I'm doing in the gym transfer outside the gym, or is it just going to make me look good? That's all they mean. Fat loss, what they just mean is metabolically demanding. They want to feel like they got their butt kicked. They want to feel like it's not necessarily that they're changing their diet. And we know most people do not change their diet. And they should not be made feel guilty that they haven't changed their diet, but at least it's weight management. At least it's offsetting some of the things that they do want to eat.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And then fun is they want to feel interested. They don't want to be bored of it. Normally that translates into some variety.
Yep.
All right. So those are my sort of elements that in general, if I have each workout sort of covers those four things,
sorry.
And I know I'm going to have, it's all right. I'm a dog lover. That's going to keep them coming back, because I want them as my client. I don't want them taking their money to you or to OTF or to anybody else, right? I have a for-profit business. Yeah. I want, not only do I want to pay my bills, but I also feel like I'm the best trainer for them. I feel like I'm better than anybody else.
Yeah.
So the first thing is their perception needs to be, I need to check all the boxes of everything else that's out there that they might like to do. I always say, if you want to know what's, how to influence people, you have to know what's already influencing them.
Yeah.
So you can't just have them come in and go, well, you know, you just need to do everything consistent. Everything's deadlift, squats, and strength. Yeah. You're going to lose them in a month. And in fact, you may actually dissuade them from exercising in total, because they may go, you know, this fitness thing's not for me. I tried it and I hated it.
Yeah. Do you feel like on the other end, though, people get too much variety where there's no like consistency to actually improve strength or performance?
Okay. So now let's get into that. This is a thing that trainers have a concern with.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I don't understand why this is ever a debate.
Yeah.
What it's really simple. Why don't I have, and this is exactly how I train.
Yeah.
I tell people, I say, look, we're going to give you the variety that you crave. However, how do you know it's working aside from physical changes, right?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to get stronger, right? Everybody wants to feel a little bit more capable. So I know, I go, look, how am I responsible to you and accountable to you if I don't show you some specifics of something changing? And in order to have something changing from first time to second time to third time, not necessarily sessions, could be month one to month two, we have to have some baselines, right? And it's not always going to be fat loss, because your diet is always not going to be consistent, right? So how do we know that you're getting stronger and fitter? Well, we have to do some things consistently, right? So fitness is not just doing something different all the time, because if you feel like that's the case, then at a certain point, you've heard all my jokes and seen all my moves. It's like a relationship at that point, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And some people do get bored. They go to OTF for 4 months and they're bored with OTF, and then they go and then they hop that way.
Yeah.
So very simple. You tell them, say, look, we're going to do one exercise a day that you're going to do consistently for 4 to 6 weeks at a time. Every Monday, this is your, I call them achievement lists.
Yeah.
Right. And each time we're going to see you get better at that. Maybe it's two moves, but no more than two moves, and everything else, I'll give you variety.
Yeah.
Like, and it's simple. Now, does it have to be only one move? Does it have to be only two moves?
Yeah.
No, that's up to the trainer to sort of figure out with the client. Obviously, you have more ability to do that if it's a one-on-one setting or semi-private versus a class. But even in a class, we have something consistent for that. Maybe it's just the one move that everybody does for that day.
Yep.
And that way at the end, everybody, look at everybody got better at this. Maybe it's one thing for strength and one thing for conditioning that you do. And then you change that every 6 weeks. The nice thing about changing that every 6 weeks, or why do I change it every 6 weeks or 4 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever, basically every 4 to 5 weeks.
Yeah.
It's not something specifically based on some magical science or anything. It really comes down to this, is that your body has some general adaption to where you change to accommodation, where it's like, you're just not going to be able to add much load to it.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was true that you could just add weight every week or every other week, I've been lifting since I've been 12 years old. I'm 42. I'd be lifting 2,000 pounds right now in squats.
Yeah.
Right. I've been doing the same weight in bicep curls since I can remember. There's only so much that I can do.
Yes.
So if you basically can get 1% better for about 4 to 6 weeks, you can manage that. Add a rep here, add 5 pounds there, and boom. But by the time you start to reach that cap, now you've just changed movements and the whole process starts over again.
Yep. Yeah. No, that's well said. So then how do you craft your programs? Do you do like a push pull format with different days? Do you do like upper lowers? Are you doing total body workouts? Like what's like maybe like a week, like if you're seeing this person twice in a week?
Like I told you, I'll tell you exactly what I do. So this is in my books and whatever, but so how the split that they use, that was really what you're asking me, the weekly split is determined by how many days of a week that they train. So if they're going to train 2 to 3 times a week, they do total body workouts, which is average for the average client.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite lines, and I've said this many times, and I've gotten always good feedback from trainers, and they go, oh, I love that line.
Yeah.
I tell clients this, I say, we train your total body because we train you assuming you're going to miss the next workout.
Yeah, I do like that. Yeah.
And what you just did, a lot of clients do, and they go, oh, finally. Because here's the thing, a lot of general clients, they don't resonate with trainers because trainers are already bought in. They already live at a gym. They're already And they're just like, dude, like, this is secondary to me. I'm not trained. You know what I mean? I'm not a gym rat. This is like adult PE to me. You know what I mean? So it's just that this group thing I did just wasn't cutting it, because I got this neck and shoulder thing. Yeah. I got the knee thing.
Yep.
So if they're training 4 days a week, then I do a push, you know, basically upper body, lower body split, upper body, lower body.
Yeah.
And if they're training, 5 or more days a week, 5 to 6 days a week, yeah, then we do some sort of body part split. And the reason why I do that is, and we do total body in order to get enough volume, because you're only training 2 to 3 times a week. If you're training 4 times a week, you're starting to get, you know, more days that you're more days on than you are off, right? There's 7 days in a week, 4 on, 3 off. So we have to have some rotation in there to make sure you're getting some rest, especially because sometimes, even though it's not preferred, because your schedule changes, maybe you have to stack 3 workouts in a row. So at least if you did one upper workout and then a lower, you have at least 1 day in between to hit that upper, because, you know, schedules change. So I'd rather you just not cancel your workout and just do it. But if you're training 5-6 times a week, if I gave you upper or lower or total body workouts, I'm burying you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's going to be brutal to keep any sort of intensity. So that's why we tend to do more of a body part split at that point. And people who train that often tend to be people who are really more into hypertrophy type training.
Yeah. Do you incorporate variables? Like, do you do like a HIIT workout every once in a while, or do you do maybe like a high load, low rep, more power performance, whatever, 5 sets of 5 kind of thing? Or how do you like work on those aspects?
So, I have, if you are a beginner, meaning you haven't lifted, or you haven't lifted in a while because you're recovering from some sort of injury or health problem, or you moved and you just haven't, it just got it. You got out of the habit, right? It's just been a while since you've challenged your body. I have a beginner program. I call it the beginner 1-2-3. So it could last anywhere from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, depending on frequency of how you train. Yep. And it's a pretty standard template that I use. Now, the next question we'll get into from this is, why do I modify the templates, which goes into the movement assessment. We'll cover that next.
Yeah.
If you're somebody who has been exercising semi-regularly, sometimes once a week, sometimes 3 times a week, but you've been doing something with it, then I take you into to the next step, which I call my base training phases. So we have 3 phases. They are linear, and I'll explain why I use linear in a second. I have what I call the muscle base phase, and then we go to the strength base phase, and then we go to the power base phase. Okay. It's very linear, and here's why.
Yeah.
I'm all for concurrent or you know, is training multiple qualities at one time.
Yeah, conjugate.
Right?
Yeah.
But if I'm taking someone who's fairly unfamiliar with not only certain moves, but hasn't been training, doing heavy or doing fast exercises, they've just been doing basic machines and bodybuilding stuff, and I'm going to put them on a concurrent workout and have them do something explosive and something really heavy just for the idea of concurrent. Yeah. They're not ready for that yet. All right. True. So the reason why I do these things in those phases, and this is a standard set, so beginner comes first, then we go into the base. Yep. The name kind of describes it. In the beginner, it's really familiarizing your body with resistance training. It's the teaching phase, right? Then the muscle base is, you've already learned how to do the movements, and now we're getting you a little close to failure. We're working on tissue tolerance a little bit, right? So everyone has a reason. The strength phase is just teaching you how to deal with a little heavier loads. Now you've built the tissue tolerance, and these are a little bit more standard. You know, it depends again how often you train per week, 3 to 6 weeks, depending.
Yeah.
And then the power phase is familiarizing you with moving fast. You know, strength is just force generation. Power is rate of force generation, or rate of force production.
Yeah.
Then once you have gone through those phases, and I'm a lot more hardcore with people when they first come in and go, look, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Then they earn the right. And I tell them, you have to earn the right for more variety. Then we go into concurrent, and the concurrent, I use what I call an SPE framework. S means strength, P means power, E means endurance. And we sort of rotate through those, which actually creates a little of that variety that they like. So one day is very high rep burner. Another day is a little heavier.
Yeah.
So that also gives them the sense of variety. But from a general fitness perspective, they are training multiple qualities. So they're overall more adaptable because they are not training for a powerlifting competition or a, you know, something specific.
Yeah.
Also, if they decide they want to train for something specific, whether it be a Spartan race or a Decafit, or they want to do powerlifting or something else, we've already set the foundation for all the fitness qualities. Now we just need to emphasize that. So it gives them the variety that they crave. I haven't got into the movement variety yet. I'm just talking about sets and reps.
Yeah.
It gives them the variety they crave, but also there is some research that shows, you know, concurrent or basically daily undulating is slightly more effective in strength because you're hitting the fibers slightly different, right?
Yeah.
So from a neck up, you know, do I enjoy it? It fits that. And from a neck down, physiological demand, right? Psychological neck up, physiological neck down. There's no downfalls to it. In fact, it makes you a little bit more versatile.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, when you're a beginner, I do minimize the variety because you're learning, right? And you're not going to learn anything if we are changing it.
True.
But we can change other things like the finisher at the end, right? We can do a little something different for that. And then once they go through those phases, I tell them you're going to earn your variety. Then we can start to go into like what I told you before, where we have one or two achievement exercises. And then the rest of the workouts can be varied, or basically it's a mix. Some things are consistent. Some things are varied. I never understood why people feel like it's either got to be all or nothing. I don't get that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. So then the next logical question is, what is your assessment? I know we kind of hinted at it. So you saw the person, you got maybe some subjective report, you know where their goal is at, you know their training history, you know that, yeah, their general goal is maybe just fitness. They're not trying to max deadlift or whatever. Where do you then maybe actually go in the physical assessment part of things?
So first off, and I'm going to answer your question directly, just a little more context to lead into that question.
Yeah.
I have a little saying that you design the program with the goal in mind, or programs,
yeah,
and you modify the program with the individual in mind. So if you notice, I already have a set system. I told you what my system is.
Yeah.
Right. So we build up, we go from, you know, learning the movements to tissue tolerance, to teaching force production, to teaching fast force. And then we bring all those things in together for ongoing, which is concurrent for the SBE framework.
Yeah.
Once you're there, you know, you've earned your variety. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I say you want to have a system is that I don't need to reinvent the wheel every time, because how do you know what's working for you if you don't have a system that you can repeat? So if you refer someone to me and you go, man, Nick, your program really helped me feel better and I'm playing tennis better or whatever your sport is, and I've got some biceps on me and I look better in my t-shirts. If I'm just reinventing the entire wheel for a new person, then I have no idea. You referred them to me. You say, do whatever you did for me, do that same magic to that person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have to think about why you go to Starbucks, because you know the latte or whatever your drink of choice is going to taste the same, whether you're in Beijing or Boston.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who the barista is.
Yeah.
Right. A Starbucks method is they have a way to make every drink. However, they can individualize it based off your preferences, right? I want an extra shot. I want it extra hot. I want oat milk instead of regular milk, whatever, but it's still a Starbucks latte.
Yep.
Right. Okay. So I still have a Nick Tumminello style of training principles that are universal, but exercises are individual. All right. So now we get into, how do I decide how to modify the program, which means the sets and reps are going to be similar in the program. The style, the tempo is going to be similar based on universal principles of what the demands I'm trying to get. I tweak the program, which is basically deciding which moves best fit you, which is what I look at in my assessment, right? So, and this is something I'm going to be teaching on. It's like a slight shameless plug here. So my assessment, I call it the movement performance assessment. the MPA.
Yeah.
And so the reasonable question is, well, how is it different than, you know, the NASMs and the FMS and whatever?
Yeah.
Right. I'm not going to sit here and say, don't do that. Just do mine. I think that stuff is confusing. I'm trying to fill a gap with what I do.
Yeah.
If you are assessing and you're looking for dysfunction, inefficiencies, you know, instability and mobility, all those assessments out there before have done a great job of getting into that. Yes, I know there's people in pain science who aren't into that. I'm not going to go down that rabbit, regardless of what you think of those things.
Yeah.
If you're doing those assessments, you are still guessing. And what you're guessing is, what can they do to create a training effect? So even though if I know that they can't do an overhead squat, or they lack shoulder mobility or core stability or whatever you're looking at, I still don't even know if they can do a deadlift right now. I still don't even know if they can do a row right now. There's certain things I don't know how to do, that I don't know if they can do that. What I do know is exercise is for everyone, but not every exercise is for everybody. Little play on words, everybody.
Yeah.
But I also know that exercise, challenging exercise relative to your level, is not only more therapeutic than we also often give it credit for, but I also know that a lot of this corrective stuff, although it may be therapeutic, it's certainly not challenging enough to build muscle, help you improve your physique, or just being encouraging enough to increase adherence, where people go, man, this is really cool. I mean, go to a corrective person and go to an F45 class, and most people will go to F45 all the time, you know, because it's a fun environment.
Corrective exercise.
Right? Yeah. So if you're a trainer, so what I would tell people is, here's how you create a very safe training effect without adding fitness to dysfunction, as they say, right? Yeah. But we need to know how to do that. Now, what you do in between sets, if you want to play the corrective game and you really believe in that, then you can do that as well. But sometimes us thoughtful trainers, we make the training about the assessment and not about fitness and strength conditioning.
Agreed.
And we always sort of tell people, well, you have to fix these things before you can train. Normally, you end up losing clients before that.
PTs are worse at that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not going to sit here and just try to bash people, but I think sometimes nobody like myself has stepped up and said, well, here's how do you do this? Here's how you don't create problems. You don't feed into any of these concerns that you may have about a deficiency here and an inefficiency there, while creating a safe training direction that's going to get this person in better shape and get them adhering and create some buy-in, so that as they progress, you can start integrating in. Interestingly, I say the two biggest dysfunctions. So real quick, my MPA, the biggest difference is it's about finding what they can do versus what they can't. All right. Yeah. And that's sort of what you're still guessing on. What's the best place to start now with this person that's going to challenge them at the highest level of the exercise hierarchy? Right. Because we put them at the highest level, like an overhead squat, and then they say they're dysfunctional. No, they just shouldn't be doing an overhead squat.
Yeah.
But then I'm going to drop you all the way down to hip bridges. Like, there's a lot of room in the middle, right? Yeah. A lot of room in the middle. Okay. Yeah. So I show where to find that exact sweet spot where they can start, and we do it fast. I show you how to do it really, really quick, and also how to separate what I call a lack of ability from a lack of awareness. Sometimes people just don't know.
Yeah.
What you're asking for.
Yeah.
So, and that's the nice thing is it's your first assessment. And the reason being is a lot of people's deficiencies that we find in these screens and assessments, which are all really well-intended, is a lot of times they're caused by two things.
Yep.
Being sedentary, right? A lack of activity.
Huge.
Lack of movement variability. And when I say movement variability, I don't mean doing random stuff all the time. I just mean the only movements that you're doing are basically carrying your groceries and sitting on your ass, right? Yeah, you know what I mean? You're just, you're not moving your body in different positions that it needs to be moving through. For active people, it's bad programming. They're using redundant exercises. They're leaving gaps in their strength, those things. So if you tend to fix those two things, and by the way, for the bad programming, you shouldn't have to feel like you have to, you know, stretch yourself and roll yourself and mobilize yourself and activate yourself into a near coma before or after your workout just to feel semi-normal. Yeah. Maybe the source is what you're doing in your workout. Maybe the exercises you're doing don't fit your body that well. Right. So that's another thing. We tend to think that correcting people is just adding new neuromuscular drills and mobility drills and buying a new textbook thick book of mobility drills, maybe you should just stop, you know, doing what, even though your squat form is good, maybe you shouldn't be back squatting. Now, if you're doing a powerlifting competition, it's not about health.
Yeah.
But I never, that's another thing that we can maybe get into. So it's really just about getting stronger. That's about putting force across tissues. It's not about getting good at exercises. So those are the kind of the two things that we cover in the assessment and in the movement performance assessment and why it goes along with the other assessments that are out there. And the nice thing is if you do that first, I tell them it shouldn't be the only assessment that you use, but I recommend it being the first assessment because as we know, if you get them better programming and you reverse sedentariness with good programming.
Yep.
And you're covering all ranges of motion and you're training safe. I don't have an exact number for this, but a lot of those problems that we see tend to go away anyway. But you're not now sacrificing, you didn't spend that time doing things that also didn't get them fitter and buying in and encouraged more. So you almost have, after about 12 weeks or so of doing this stuff, and there's still a few little issues that you see, a little ache and pain here, a little, little something there, then you can go, okay, I think you need a little extra intervention. I think you need the supplement. And that's where the things that you learn from the FMSs and the NASMs and the course on breathing and the course on feet and whatever else it is that you're taking, that can be your little specialty toolbox.
Got it.
And you know they're probably needed. So it's a valuable assessment that way as well.
So is that part of your assessment, if I'm trying to interpret, like you just have them do a deadlift and see how they actually deadlift? Or like, do you just run them through like some basic movement patterns or?
So first thing is I want to see, first off, are you even able to do the hip hinge while keeping the back straight? Can you disassociate hip flexion from spinal flexion, right? Yeah. Now, some people, you know, you can put the dowel across their spine. Some people, that doesn't do anything. They just have a dowel on their spine. They feel they're moving. Some people just aren't built for that. Now, it doesn't mean they're never going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
But right now, you have a decision to make. This is another thing. So I know I need to want to strengthen their posterior chain, right? So maybe I can do that with hip bridges and some other options, right? What can they do now, right? Can it be hip hinging oriented exercises? Or so I have some quick ways to teach them how to do it without putting the dowel rod and spending 10 minutes trying that, because that's a problem. That's a trade-off.
Yeah.
Now we get into the rabbit hole of where a lot of trainers would go down. Well, now I have to make this about the hip hinge. Can anybody find me any research anywhere that says somebody has to learn how to do the hip hinge like a weightlifter?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So no, they don't. The only reason you do a hip hinge is for a deadlift to distribute force where you want it. But I can watch jujitsu players and wrestlers flex their spine all day because that's movement. Movement is not weightlifting. Okay. True. Movement is more varied. So the question is, how do I spend that time? Right now, what's the best time to get you stronger? Let's find things you can do now. Now I have I call it the three T's, right?
Yeah.
So train it, teach it, and I forget whatever, my brain's fried right now. I can't even think about the other one. So anyway, is some things I will train. What can I train right now? It means load. And what do I have to teach, right? So then as your active recovery, maybe I get you working on those motor control drills. But I'm not going to sacrifice workout time that you're there to get you stronger and fitter and into shape and more encouraged to build a love for exercise by making it a hip hinge class for you, where you may not even get good at that, but we spent 20 minutes doing this and you're like, I haven't even sniffed a bicep curl.
Yeah.
You know, like my neighbors are having a blast telling me how great their workouts are. And my trainer's got me with this dowel rod and the bands and I haven't even felt a burn in my triceps or abs. What's going on here?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. So now as some trainers, they may be very elitist and they may go, well, they need to learn it. Well, I'd argue they don't necessarily need to, but I would also say, you have to understand that that's their session, not yours.
Yeah.
And everything is a trade-off.
Yeah.
Are you willing to risk losing that client because they're discouraged from what, and they're not liking it, and they will go somewhere for their money that they're going to like better and go somewhere where you really think is going to put them at risk? Or are you willing to compromise a little bit and go, okay, I can get them stronger at some things now while building trust and buy-in So they continue to stay with me and then maybe sprinkle in a little bit of this work. And as they get more into this, maybe they go, you know, I really want to get a little better at my deadlift.
Yeah.
Which takes some time. Can't do that on the first date.
So then what are your objective measures of progress? Is it strength on a lift, like a pounds? Is it their weight? Are you measuring anything? Are you like, let's say you're seeing somebody for 6 months. Are you tracking any measures of any sorts?
Yeah. Love that question.
Yeah.
So I feed progress is built into the, is into the progression of the program. So we have people do 1% better. So we don't need to do, we don't need to have testing days. Now we obviously do a first session assessment. And what I tell people is I say, instead of doing, it's a test drive instead of a driver test, right? So you come in because you heard I'm a great trainer and now I'm into assessments and I like looking at your breathing and your rib angle and your posture and your hurdle step, depending on what school of thought I come from or whatever. And you've come in looking at like, hey, I'm interested in this trainer because I've heard he gives me a good workout. And I basically make it feel like a doctor visit. And I basically tell you all the things that are wrong with you, right?
Yeah.
You still don't know if, you might be impressed. You might think, oh, this trainer's really smart, but you still don't know what it's like to train with me, right? Or you maybe think, oh, this guy's kind of more like a doctor than it is working out. So now can I afford going to the trainer doctor guy and going somewhere else to actually get a workout? Right?
Yeah.
So you need to be able to actually create a great client experience while learning the things that us trainers want to see. So I show quicker ways to get both of those done.
Yeah.
I like that. Now, once we feed you into the program, wherever you fit, like I said, whether you're on beginner program or one of the base programs or SPE, it's already fed in there. So for example, if it's strength phase we're doing, then we might start you with a one lift and we might start you with 4 sets of 6 to 8 reps. And then the next week you come in, it might be 4 sets of 4 to 5 reps. So this is really simple now.
Yeah.
So I basically ask you to do something heavier. The next time may be 5 sets of 4 to 5 reps. The next one may be, the next week may be 4 sets of 2 to 3 reps or 5 sets of 2 to 3 reps and a 1 set of 5th set of like an 8 second eccentric overload.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So each time you're doing more, do we actually physically test you? Most clients don't care that much.
Yeah.
But I will ask them, you know, is there something that you really feel like, what would be a metric that you would feel successful at? And you'd be surprised. Some people go, man, I really like, so the tough one is the pull-up. When people say, especially females, when they say, I want to do a pull-up, and sometimes they're not even close to doing a pull-up. Yeah. A lot of times it's just body weight. You don't even have to be overweight, but if you just got thick legs, you've got soccer legs and, you know, and sometimes it's like you're, that may not be in the cards.
Yes.
Right. You know, unless I chop your whole bottom half off. Right. So sometimes we go, well, let's look at lat pull down. Right. Can you just do more weight for 3 reps or whatever? Yeah. So that's where the consistency I told you about coming in of having a few different challenges comes in. Another thing, by the way, for variety, let's say you don't like just having your trainer. You don't like having just one thing consistent.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just not creative enough to mix it up that often.
Yeah.
You can do all the meat and potatoes of the workout consistently and just mix up the finisher.
Yeah.
Right. And actually I can even justify why that actually may be better conditioning.
Yeah.
Here's why is if you always do, let's say aerodyne bike, or running, what do you get better at? What does your body adapt to really well? You get better at that activity.
Yeah.
But if you're mixing it up all the time and your body's not as familiar with it, you actually burn more energy trying to do it.
Yeah.
Because you're not efficient at it.
Yeah.
And if the goal of the finisher is to increase the metabolic demand, right? So as a trainer, we look at that as conditioning.
Yeah.
Right. So how am I going to progress that? Well, if we want to do it consistently, I'll gradually reduce rest in between the sets.
Yeah.
But we also know for clients, they like to feel like they got their butt kicked.
Yeah.
Right? So again, neck up and neck down.
Yep.
But even if I mix that up every time, there's something to be said. Not only do they like it psychologically from the neck up, they got the butt kick and they got the variety they crave, but they're actually probably going to be creating a higher metabolic demand because they're just not good at it.
Yeah. No, it makes complete sense. Yeah. And people usually just do what they're good at. So whatever, if they run, all they do is run and their body just gets used to it and you don't get the same training effect.
Right. Yeah. Right. So instead of doing, you know, the, you can just do the finisher of the day and you'd be surprised how people will just love that.
Yeah.
Right. It'll be really consistent. Even hardcore lifters, give them a little something to do unique at the end.
Well, for time's sake, what's kind of, we'll kind of gear towards wrapping up is like, do you recommend references for program design stuff? I know you have some books, or is there things that people you would follow or any, yeah, references you'd recommend?
No. And I'm not going to sit here and say my own books just because that would be self-gratifying. So yeah. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons why, so first off, my, people are going to be like, well, it gotta be something. My flagship product is Practical Program Design Mastery online. We call it PPD. Okay. It's all online course. It's literally templates. It's everything I do. But the reason why, to go back to sort of my answer, the reason why I started talking about that and became so passionate about it is because pretty much all program design I read was based off of Eastern Bloc type stuff, preparing for Olympics and lifting. It's not very relatable to personal training, to the everyday client. And so that's why I don't really, there's nothing that really covers that. But yet the majority of clients, the majority of trainers are working with are those individuals. And like I said, a lot of trainers, even though trainers don't think those people are serious because they're not chasing a bigger back or a bigger deadlift, the fact is they'll come to you for years on end.
Agreed. Yeah.
And they just, they're just not, you're just not looking at how they're gauging the metrics. Like I said, it's how often, how much buy-in, how interested they are. They, if in order for people to work hard, they first have to come to work, want to come to work. So that's your first goal. And they want to come to work with you. So just understand that. And you understand that that's why fitness is a broader thing.
Yeah. So then if people want to follow you or see your resources, you have a website, or what's the best ways to?
Yeah, they just type in my name, nicktumminello.com. T-U-M-M-I-N-E-L-L-O. Same thing. You go on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, I'm easy to find. And
okay. That's great. So the last question that I ask everybody, the theme of the podcast is optimizing capacity in any and all fronts. What are you working on in 2022? What are you trying to get better at? Anything personally? Read more, something fitness, something else? What's your goal this year?
Yeah, well, I bought a condo down here in Florida that needed just a little bit of updating in a few places. It's not like a full project.
Yeah.
I've helped build my previous gyms before. My business partner was a lot more handy than I was. He taught me a lot. So it's actually just become a little more handy. So I always tell people, I say, I really don't know what I'm doing a lot of things, but I got a can-do attitude. So as long as I know I'm not going to burn my place down, I'll just start in on the project and I'll just figure it out. And I've already done that with things, and I've just become more handy at keeping a life skill. So that's actually been a goal of mine. I've been gradually doing that.
I think that principle can carry over to many things in life. I like that. Yeah. Give it a try. Don't be hesitant. You'll figure it out kind of mindset. Well, sweet. Well, I appreciate you taking the time. I know I learned a bunch and I know you're busy. So appreciate you sitting down and chit-chatting.
Appreciate the platform you're giving me, man, and everything you're doing to help, you know, provide a free resource like this for everybody. I hope they appreciate it.
Yeah. Have a good evening and we'll be in touch sometime soon.
Sounds good, man.
All right. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast, where our goal is to help you optimize your capacity on any and all fronts. If you care to learn more about capacity and what we do, go to capacitypt.com or follow us on social media at capacity.pt or follow this podcast on any podcast platforms. Thanks.